In the age-old battle of the high school jocks and the geeks, the athletes and the math whizzes, this division of high school has been the storyline of many a coming-of-age movie. But for one of our next guests, the jocks have won, and it's not a good thing.
From where I sit, both as a parent and professional, in so many of these high schools, the high school sporting culture has essentially taken over the main mission of the high school.
That's sociologist Earl Smith. He's the author of Race, Sport, and the American Dream. He takes the position that the emphasis on high school sports and the ever-present but outlandish dream of making it to the pros is the worst thing possible for lower-income students. But postdoctoral researcher Daniel Bowen says there's just no data to support that.
There's a lot of reason to believe that school-sponsored sports actually can prove beneficial on the academic end. Schools that emphasize sports have high participation rates and actually have higher winning rates actually are more successful on academic outcomes such as test scores and graduation rates.
Daniel Bowen works with the Kinder Institute for Urban Research at Rice University in Houston, Texas.
It seems as if there might be a social capital aspect to sports. As a high school teacher myself, I actually got just as much, if not more, accomplished meeting with parents at high school football and basketball games than I would at a parent-teacher conference, because I could often meet up and run into parents and students who I oftentimes wouldn't get a chance to speak with during school hours.
Earl Smith, can sports and academics coexist in the current environment?
It depends on the school itself. A lot of this depends on socioeconomic status of the communities in which these schools exist. A good portion of the curriculum, and especially in under-resourced minority high schools, specifically African-American high schools, sports is promoted as a way to move these young men, more so than women, off into these colleges that need them as athletes. I mean, these college programs wouldn't exist if these kids weren't coming out of high school. So there's a symbiotic relationship between these high schools and colleges. And once you understand what kind of academic curriculum a lot of these high schools have, you would come away asking some serious questions about whether or not things like social promotion are taking place, how much of the high school GPA is actually legitimate education, what type of support programs exist in these high schools as opposed to not existing in other high schools. And at the end of the day, as a college professor for the last 30 plus years, I've seen the rise in remedial courses at the college level, English, reading, math, which I think tells us something about the type of education that's taken place in high school.
Considering the alternatives for some of these students in these under-resourced communities, you know, isn't this better than the alternative?
Not if the outcomes are poor. You know, we can keep these kids around for 4 or 5 years in high school. We can keep them around in college for 5 or 6 years. And at the end of their eligibility, it's over. There's no outcome. There's no positive outcome. They may, you know, you got a couple of trophies, you got a couple of fake rings, but you don't have anything that moves you into the future. And you got to remember, we're talking about kids at that point who are 22, 23 years of age, who have the rest of their life in front of them. Much of the education that these kids receive is vacuous.
Daniel Bowen, your response.
I think that's extremely harsh to say that students, especially ones who go through maybe even sports-emphasized programs, come out with nothing. They just come out with empty trophies. There's been lots of research to suggest that students who participate in sports benefit in ways that aren't necessarily measured by traditional measures of academic achievement, like test scores. We know that people who participate in sports develop in areas such as leadership, as well as in a wide range of areas that are often referred to as non-cognitive skills that have real benefits and have been shown experimentally to produce outcomes that are beneficial to people's long-term life outcomes. They actually did a randomized control trial in Chicago with school-sponsored sports programs and showed that students didn't necessarily significantly benefit in terms of academic achievement, in terms of test scores, but they did benefit in terms of their likelihood of not dropping out, persisting and demonstrating skills that do, in fact, have long lifetime economic benefits.
Again, I appreciate knowing that these things are taking place and people are trying to measure them, but you really can't measure them. We throw around these terms like leadership, the guys run out on the field, they whoop it up with their teammates, they're in the huddle, they're really exerting leadership. Bunk. That's not leadership. High school test scores are important. You look across the world, the U.S. sinks lower and lower and lower when measured against other industrialized nations. As I said before, you come to the college, Yale, Harvard, Princeton, all these colleges that we would put in the top 10 list as being the selective places that we would like our own kids to go. They're offering remedial classes. Who's in the remedial classes? The people who play the dominant sports, not the cross-country runners, not the tennis players, not the women who play volleyball or rugby, but the guys who play football and basketball. They're in those courses. And I think there's something relevant about looking in that particular direction to see what exactly is happening. Is this education really an education? And with automation, with the traditional car wash, no longer the traditional car wash, it's automated. Where do these people go to work? These are the same people who end up unemployed, underemployed, who end up in prison, et cetera, et cetera.
Daniel, does organized sports contribute to the need for remedial education programs at the college level in your research?
There is nothing to suggest that there's a causal relationship between the existence of sports and remedial education. We can't say for a fact that if these individuals had not participated in sports that they would not be in remedial education, because in many cases, those students wouldn't be in those universities in the first place. So you can't necessarily say that X caused Y in this particular instance. Also, to just dismiss some of these measures as being bunk, such as the leadership one, I mean, there's statistical evidence that these individuals are voting in higher rates, they're volunteering more in their community, they're taking active roles. To just kind of dismiss this as nonsensical and relying on anecdotal evidence is more nonsensical, in my opinion.
If school athletics went away, Earl, do you think the remedial classes would go away at the college level?
You wouldn't need them.
You're sure about that?
You wouldn't. I'm positive. You wouldn't need them because the schools would no longer have an incentive to recruit these players.
All right, Earl and Daniel, I want to end on this point here. Should high school coaches teach a subject? My high school football coach taught history and civics, and the tennis coach taught math. Should a coach be academically affiliated in a high school program? Daniel, you begin.
I do worry sometimes about extreme cases of, you know, coaches who maybe are given a subject area, and you often hear stories of them kind of shirking their responsibilities because they're divided with, you know, their obligations both towards the academics and the athletic sides of it. But again, there is data to suggest that this isn't necessarily the case. I'm actually working on a paper right now with a couple colleagues, Anna Galate and Julie Trivett, and we systematically go throughout the entire state of Florida and see if there's a relationship between coaches and subsequent student outcome, and we don't find that coaches are any better or any worse than other teachers. Now, in part, this is because I think principals are pretty savvy and know how to best allocate their resources, so in many cases, they're probably not putting, you know, their star football coach in, you know, calculus class. But I think that this suggests that this isn't necessarily a definitive hindrance on academic success of students.
Here's what it's a hindrance on: the budget. Too many of these high schools that want to be in a triple A or, you know, gazillion A conference, they've gone out and they have hired gunslingers to come in and coach their teams who have nothing to do with the academic mission of the school. They sit in the office, they work recruiting, they do all this other film studies for their teams, but they don't teach. When I went to high school, every coach was a certified teacher in the high school, even if they taught gym. Today, you don't have that. You look at the scoreboards at these high schools, they're advertising Nikes and Coke and McDonald's. It's become a commercial enterprise just under the level of what you see at the colleges. And so now you have these paid coaches who don't work in the school showing up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon to coach the sport.
Daniel, I'll give you the last word here.
So I actually agree with Earl, though, on this one, that I don't think it's a good thing necessarily for coaches to not be internal to the system. I mean, this goes back again to the social capital argument of how school-sponsored sports can benefit schools. Well, if the coaches aren't internal to the system, that doesn't provide the same benefit because you don't have coaches there during the morning hours speaking with other teachers, hearing how his, you know, athletes are doing in the classroom and possibly following up on that. So I will agree with that because, I mean, when we look at the other extreme example, Bobby Hurley Sr., the famous high school basketball coach in Jersey City, provides the counterexample of how, you know, a coach can really be a pillar of a school and of a community.
Daniel Bowen is a postdoctoral fellow at the Kinder Institute for Urban Research at Rice University in Houston, Texas. Earl Smith is a sociologist and author of Race, Sport, and the American Dream in Fairfax, Virginia. Thanks so much, Earl.
Thank you, John, and thank you, Daniel.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thanks, John, and good meeting you. Nice talking to you as well, Earl.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.